Good morning, and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Ashwini. Can you hear me now?
Hi, Jen. Yes, thank you.
Oh, wow. Okay, amazing. Third time is the charm. All right, so here are assignments from the weekend. On Friday, can you see how the voices are framing your choices to ensure that you never win? Example, if I stop and celebrate, even if it's just a small celebration, I'm taking precious time away from accomplishing all the important things on my to-do list. If I don't stop and celebrate, I don't get to enjoy the success I've worked so hard for. Either way, I'm not doing the thing I should be doing. What are the choices the voices offer you? RL what you see. On Saturday, what possibilities might be available if you dropped out of ego's either-or framing of the issue? RL what you see. And on Sunday, self-hate holds in place the suffering over an issue by making it you wrong. What self-hating voices do you hear regarding this process focus? Write down the self-hating messages. Example, it's not a big deal. Why make a fuss? RL what you're seeing. Note, never record self-hate messages. All right, let's take our first caller. First caller, you're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi. I'm seeing a lot, and I'm seeing how it's a story that I can't celebrate or enjoy unless everything's going the way it should go. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it never does, mm-hmm. because even if it looks like it is, there's always a, yeah, what if, and a yes, but.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's never a reason, a good reason to celebrate. Mm-hmm. So what I've been practicing over the weekend has been celebrating is a process, and so just showing up and being grateful. Like the celebration process has gratitude in it. It has willingness in it. It has showing up in it. It has presence in it. And so practicing all those things are a way of celebrating life.
Oh, precisely. So, because I think, as you're saying, first of all, you're aware it's a story, and you see
yes.
how the story is structured in order to make sure you never celebrate, right? So
right.
if the assumption is it has to go a certain way, and there's a reason for celebrating, but it never goes that way because the voice is there to make sure it's pointing out how it doesn't go that way, that's we automatically recognize that structure is a setup for no celebration.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a reason to celebrate, you'll never find the reason. And so to drop that entire assumption or presumption or setup and just be here, because there's no reason to celebrate. Celebrating is a process. I'm here mm-hmm. with gratitude and willingness and showing up, and so there it is. And that's mm-hmm. the whole sort of thesis of the focus, right? That the assumption is that there is an occasion we need in order to celebrate and has to look a certain way, but actually mm-hmm. celebration is just being here for life as it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. That's great. Yes. Thank you. Yesterday, it was, there was just celebration in my heart. It was mm-hmm. just kind of a gift. It felt like a gift. And I wanted to serve. Mm-hmm. And so I cleaned the bathroom. And while I was cleaning the bathroom, I was serving the bathroom, and I was celebrating the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, usually that is such a horrible chore. I put it off and put it off and put it off. And it was a celebration.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I hear you saying, right, Catherine, is the insight drops in around the structure of how you're kept from celebrating,
mm-hmm.
but celebrating is in your heart. And so you had a direct experience of engaging with the bathroom or whatever it is from that place which celebrates all rather than outside that place which requires a reason to celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a direct experience of the insight, right? What's possible when I'm not in that story?
Yeah. There's a despair process that takes me over frequently in the morning, and then projects a day of despair and boredom and misery and suffering. And I saw that perhaps because of the celebration practice. I saw that this morning, and saw that it really has nothing to do with anything. It's a process, and it has no meaning whatsoever. It doesn't mean there's something to despair about. It doesn't mean there's nothing to celebrate. It's simply a mind habit, a thinking habit. And so since I had that insight, I've been celebrating that.
Fantastic. Precisely. Yeah. And it's what we talk about all the time, that suffering is a process and ending suffering is a process. So when you clearly see that these are the elements of the suffering process, I have the ability to not do it anymore, right? I just switched to the celebration process. You had that direct experience. As soon as I shift the attention to, okay, I'm not listening to that story, that place of the heart is available. Where every moment is a celebration, and seeing the story is also a celebration, right?
Yes. Yeah. So it's all good.
All good.
Yeah.
Well, happy celebration.
Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. Ashwini, can you still hear me okay?
Clearly.
Excellent. I love that conversation. It reminds me so much of what I saw as one of the themes in the email class, where conditioned mind attempts to make everything into a thing. And it's what you and Sherry have been talking about on the show forever. Make celebration into a thing, but it's not. It's a process. And so when we turn the attention to the process, the content, in this case, the bathroom, drops in as just saying the way to practice the process of celebration.
Yeah, and it also has those elements, right? It's heart-centered, it's service-oriented, it's for the benefit of all, it's being here. There's just in the process, all of those elements are the content, right?
Yes, exactly. I had such a smile when Catherine said, you know, I really wanted to serve, so I cleaned the bathroom.
Yeah.
So it.
Yeah.
That's just so it. Yeah.
That is so it. Absolutely.
All right, let's take our next caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Rebecca from the monastery.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey. I love this focus, and what it's the particular focus that dropped in for me was to celebrate endings. What I've been seeing is that very thing y'all were just talking about, that it's really a process, that ending is not a thing, it's a process. And when I sort of connected the dots around celebration being a synonym for presence, it felt like life was showing me or was distinguishing this whole area of life, of my life, where there's been unconsciousness or a passing over. And so to see, so I've been practicing like endings of meals or endings of sleep or being awake or endings of meditations, you know, all of these things that are really just transitions.
Yes.
And practicing bringing awareness to that, but sort of the first part of the transition, you know, the ending part of the transition.
Yeah, so it's the same, it's a follow-on to what we were looking at with Catherine, right? That it ending is not a thing, celebration's not a thing. If we're in the process of it, we see it as the continuum that you're seeing it. And so the end of a meal or the end of meditation is not an ending, it's just simply, I think Sherry said this on in an email class response, right? You don't quit. There's nothing about quitting around it. It's just simply, yes, it's just simply you stop doing that and you start doing something else. And
exactly.
So that is that it's to move through life, to be alive is an ongoing and continuous process, and to bring awareness, presence to it is actually the celebration of stopping one thing and starting something else in the continuity of existence, right?
Right, right. And here's what I saw on the assignment of what's possible. What are the possibilities if you stepped out of the karmic framing? So it occurred to me that this is the most exquisite practice for the moment of death. It is just because I, more than anything, want to be here for the moment of death. I want to be in awareness or be awareness. And so what I've been practicing, well, I'll just say, I just think that'll be the most fascinating thing ever, you know, to be present during that transition. And so I've been practicing with it around sleep, around, you know, like practicing, seeing how long I can stay in awareness as I'm falling asleep. And that is such a time when the mind just goes everywhere, and I'm just sort of holding it all, being there with it all, and, you know, and anyway, it just feels like that there's a possibility there that I have never yet really realized in bringing conscious awareness to that process.
So being conscious, in other words, all transitions, right? And that ultimate transition when of death is also a place where this practice can be available. And Rebecca, I think you're pointing to an important place, right? It's like, if I'm not here now, how will I ever learn to be here now? And so,
exactly.
Right? That's really the application of what you're pointing to, which is I train to be here now so I can be here now, right? There's no future. Yeah. If I'm thinking about the future now, then I'll always be thinking about the future now because I'm not here for the now, and I don't practice that.
And exactly.
And so that's the sort of training that we're looking at. And I would project that this is the Zen paradox of that preparing for the moment of death means that we're paying attention to every moment of life. So what I'm really practicing is being present to now, is being present to my life, to fully being here and alive. I'm not really practicing for the moment of death, right?
Right,
I'm practicing being here for life.
Because the best, my best chance to be there for the moment of death is to be here now.
That's right. And that, you know, and the benefit of that is to live.
And here's one tangible example that has been fun. So that there are two ways that can, the bad choices, you know. One is to just pass over the ending to what's next, you know, so just dismiss there. But the other is to cling. I especially notice that at the end of meals. There's always this process like, oh, I'm about out of food. You know, it's like, no, I want more. And hot showers. That one's another one. It's like, I just want to cling. Not yet. And I don't want to do that. You know, I want to, and so I want to be fully present and accepting of every single moment. And so it's been fun to just practice, like watching the hand turn off the water of the shower, being okay, watch what the voices do, you know, and just really in love and acceptance, being with it all.
Well, what I hear you say there is it's exquisite calibration, right? It's the fruit on the tree, and the moment it's completely ripe, it falls off the tree, right? And so it's a calibration to when to being in the moment of here, right? When the transition happens, and that mental, watching the mental process that is causing us to flip over the moment to look to what's next, or to hold on to a moment way past the moment is over. And you can calibrate to it in a shower or in a meal or anything else where that intuition of intelligence registering it's time for now being different from now. it's there, right? And then watching the tendency to linger or to move on It's just such a practice of awareness. Yeah. Oh,
it's so fun.
And so
thank
fun.
You. And thank yes. you for that beautiful write-up. And my gosh, the focus is just exquisite. So much gratitude.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. It is such a paradox, Ashoni, right? Because that, in a way, there are no endings, right? There's just now.
Yeah.
So that it is such a exquisite place to calibrate to, as you were talking about.
Yeah, completely.
All right. Let's take our next caller. Hang on one sec. I'm going to jump in queue. Hang on. Okay, there we go. Next caller, you're now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Debbie from Minnesota. Hi, Jen. Hi, Ashwini.
Hey, Debbie. What are you seeing?
Well, what gets in the way of celebrating, I've been holding it as a process in the way you've been describing, is you should be doing something else.
Mm.
And so if I take the bait and I try to hurry and do something else at the same time or add it in or just quickly do it, that's unsatisfying, and then I should be doing something else, of course, because it just leads to more, you should be doing something else. And then, you know, the practice of celebrating what I'm doing.
Yeah. It's really, you're articulating, right, Debbie, what we've been looking at in the email class and also in every practice place, that we get clear about what the ego process is, which for you is adding something to the moment. Here, you could add one more thing. You could add one more thing, and then it just feels pressured and dissatisfying and unfulfilling. And so noticing that, we drop into the moment and go to, well, I'm just celebrating what I'm doing now. What's in this moment that contains everything that needs to be in this moment, and really being able to rest in that.
Right, and that's challenging. You know, even just now when I went outside with my daughter, and she'll say to me, when we go outside, you always want to do a task, and then the time is over, whether it's taking out the garbage cans or whatever it is, a task that needs doing, because even if I'm not doing it internally, my mind is wrapped around what needs to happen and when will that happen. So it requires a lot of restraint, because whether or not the behavior is restrained, that's where my attention is patterned to go.
Brilliantly stated. Completely, right? Because what you're talking about is even, so, and it really, it points to the progression of the practice, right? So I think this is something that something arises in intelligence, then the ego takes it, it becomes a thought, thought becomes word, word becomes action, or thought becomes action. And so you restrain it at the level of the action, because I project there was a time in your life that you couldn't do that, that when you went outside, the task would get done. But there's a restraint now that in the outward behavior, and you're right, when we have to restrain the thought, it is challenging. And you have such a delightful little bodhisattva with you to tell you to be present and enjoy where you are, right?
Right, which is what you, I mean, going out to play, there's never an agenda.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's a structure for you to mirror your intention and to just participate in it. And I think this, again, is something that Sherry's been pointing to in the email class. It's not a requirement that you go up against that mental process. You could just play, right? Just engage with her, and then that melts away.
Yeah. That's what I'm seeing. It's more, where do I, which wills do I feed? Because the thoughts are going to be there, but I don't need to attend to them.
Yes, so the restraint is...
Right? And then the less I attend to them, the restraint is where with my attentional faculty, right?
True, yeah. Yes. The restraint is a restraint of attention. It's not a restraint of thought.
Right.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Right. Yeah, so it's great to practice with people who can describe it so well. Every day.
Yeah.
It's like everything I ever learned theoretically, philosophically through yoga tradition is now articulated more in terms of how we live it out day to day and what it feels like for me to describe what at one time was a concept. So I'm so grateful for the practice. I'm so happy for the practice opportunities that are there. And very, very happy to be participating today. So thank you.
Amen to that. Thank you, Debbie.
Yeah,
deep gratitude.
Sorry, I think I cut Debbie off there. Thanks for joining us, Debbie. You took the words right out of my mouth, Ashwini. Amen to that. I mean, what Debbie was just saying about it's so helpful to practice with folks who can help us articulate what we're seeing because it's so hard to see it inside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so to have that facilitation, to have that mirroring is just, it's thrilling, really. Mm.
Well, and all the facets that everybody brings to it, right? Just today,
exactly.
Right?
The
texture of and the dimensions of experience.
Exactly. And that piece that just came out of that call, the restraint is the restraint of attention. That's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so big and so helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have time for at least one more caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Eleanor in Georgia, Athens.
Hey, Eleanor.
Hey. Sorry, I think I would express to start my gratitude. I've had new gratitude and appreciation for Sangha, just to know that there are people out there that are practicing and know what I'm. I've always tried to explain practice often to other people, and it's just for us. Yeah. It's not always.
Yes, it's very much like a Snoopy cartoon, right? You know, it's like all these bubbles with words on top that no one else can understand because it is a vocabulary and it is an experience that you have to have in order to be able to relate to, right?
You're right, because what we do is we hear someone else and we resonate with that.
Yeah.
And so it's
yeah.
experience more than the words. The words
That's
don't
right.
do it.
Yes,
exactly.
The flower sermon, right?
Not sure.
Oh, just that, you know, when the way the root of awareness practice is traced back to an incident in the Buddha's life where he's supposed to have held up a flower to the audience and no one else was able to pick up on it,
yeah,
but there was one person who just saw that and smiled and awoke, right? Because there
right.
was that silent transmission of, it's inarticulatable anyway, and so when I hold it up and both of us see the same thing, we both get it, right?
Yes, I do remember. Thank you for that. So I started out this focus just when I read the initial focus, celebration was big. It was, this is it. This is wonderful. And then chose something to look at. It's been very helpful, but it's been on a processes of how I'm separated from folks from celebrating, and how ego likes to separate me from other people, and that they're doing it wrong. They're you know, the whole ego thing about just comparison. But the good news is that I've been able to see that without falling for it. I see that it's trying to tell me there's something wrong with me, and I can see it without going all the way into it. I can be in that place of awareness. Without, I think, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, it sounds like it, right? It's the reason we look at conditioned mind is so that we can become aware of conditioned mind and train exactly as you're pointing to, right, Eleanor? Instead of looking through it, I can see what it is and I can look at it. And looking at it gives me the choice of choosing something else. And so what you're reporting is you chose a process where there is suffering and you've been able to break it down and look at it from the perspective of every time you look at it, you don't fall into it and believe it. You're just able to see it for what it is. And that is a step in the process of being free from it, right?
Yeah, and yes, and looking back over the practice with this, I see that those moments were celebratory moments when I could look out and see other people doing things that in the past ego would catch me on and make me critical of them. And now that's not well, I've seen sometimes, it probably will still happen, but I can see it and go, oh, that is not, you know, that's just ego trying to separate me from them. And it's not my responsibility. It's all those, it's a lot of stories, but I don't have to go with them.
That's right. Yes. So, and you're pointing to something so important also, right, Eleanor, because awareness is always aware. And so just because I happen to be identified, attention is on a story, does not mean the celebration's not happening, right? Mm-hmm. Because awareness is always aware. And so it's a twofold place of recognizing that all of those moments where I watched not going with the criticism or judgment are moments of celebration. And even the moments where I did go with judgment or criticism, celebration was happening because I am not required to celebrate, right?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a good one. No pressure to celebrate.
Right.
So yesterday,
celebration is happening as Eleanor all the time.
It just happens. And I got to see that yesterday in the workshop where I was enjoying a task I was doing. And I could see that story come through about the clock and hurrying up, finishing, and oh, no, the time. And, you know, I just smiled and laughed through that, which is, you know, it's still there, but it sure was pleasant just to see it.
Right. So it's expanded awareness, right, Eleanor, that oftentimes when we're completely identified, the awareness is collapsed. But as we train, as we catch the process, as we see conditioned mind rather than through conditioned mind, we increase our facility and ability to be in an expanded awareness place that can notice the conversation but not go with it and therefore still enjoy your task wonderfully.
And that's been the biggest thing, I think, for me this year, is that I can see those things happening with acceptance, and it's without self-criticism and self-hate.
It has
a much harder time, you know, when it's like, okay, you know. So grateful for that. Big.
So great and so big that part of what we dismantle is the circuit that maintains ego, which is self-hating. So the notion that I still have an ego becomes the reason to be self-hating, right? So that has fallen off, that, oh, I watch it, I see it, and I'm staying with the awareness rather than moving into the conversation through the on-ramp of self-hate. I shouldn't have that thought, right?
Exactly.
It's lovely. Yeah.
It is. So thank you. Thank you all. Thank you, everybody, so much.
Thanks, Eleanor. You stop feeling bad, right? And then the whole world opens
That's
up.
That's it. So on to celebrating.
On to celebrating. Go happy.
Go happy.
Thanks for joining us, Eleanor. And I am having a little trouble. Oh, there she is. Got her. Okay. Eleanor is now muted. Excellent. All right. Well, that brings us perfectly to the end of the show, Ashwini. And our assignment for today is, there is always an implied message underlying what self-hate says. Like the raised eyebrow that is loaded with meaning, every self-hating voice is loaded with implications. Assignment. What message about who and how you are is being implied by the self-hate messages? Example, the implied message in "it's not a big deal, why make a fuss?" is that I'm not worth celebrating. RL what you see. Reminder, never record self-hating messages. All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Ashwini.
Thank you, Jen. Go happy.
Go happy.